Vicious deniers of history have managed to find a constituency who maintain the Holocaust never happened. It's a bitter con job that insults the memory of the millions who died. This is a con that the nation of Turkey has similarly maintained in its treatment of ethnic Kurds and Armenians. In the case of Armenians a century ago, the world watched a forced migration and slaughter of Armenians from Turkey to Syria, and often to the migrants' death. The Armenian genocide has been forgotten today except by those who keep the story alive, and its denial, in part, motivated Adolf Hitler to think that his final solution for the Jews could be pulled off in the last century. Harry Kirkjian was one of the Armenian survivors. He spoke to the University of Southern California's Shoah Foundation.
I woke up middle of the night. I heard all Armenians hollering in Turkish, "Allah, neredesin? Niçin bizi kurtarmıyorsun?" They were asking God, "Where are you, God? Why are we punishing so much this way?"
Investigative reporter Dawn Anahid McKean grew up hearing stories like Harry's. Her own grandfather was one of those Armenian migrants forced to walk from Turkey to Syria. She retraces her grandfather's steps in her remarkable new book, The 100-Year Walk, An Armenian Odyssey.
My mother has been telling me the story since I was a child, but I could only understand fragments of it because as a child, how can you understand that your grandfather had to walk basically naked without food or water and had to drink his own urine to survive? And I never learned about it in school. It was only when I grew up and he had written it all down into booklets, which were published in the 60s, and it was finally translated from Armenian into English. And I was reading it, and I just could not believe that this endangered protagonist was my own grandfather.
How did you find these booklets? Because the story of where they were in your family's stuff is a detective story in and of itself.
Yes. Well, we started with two of the notebooks we had always known about. They were published in Armenian in the 60s. His story in the booklets just picked up in 1916, which is in the middle of World War I. My mother found two more notebooks at her house, just in the back of things. She can't really read Armenian, so didn't really know what it contained, and that detailed his life before the war. And then once I read that, I realized how meticulous my grandfather was, and there was another gap.
And you knew it was somewhere.
I knew it was somewhere, and my uncle found it in his garage.
How much of a cultural resource of the Armenian community did you rely on and did you really discover to do this translation, to answer these questions, to put all the details together before you went off and actually recreated the journey yourself?
The biggest help to me were all these kind of old ladies who were friends of my mother, who lived around in the neighborhood, who could read Armenian, and we would go there and they would start to translate his journals and I'd be typing it down. I'm only half Armenian, so I wasn't that much a part of the community. So I understand the community, but I could also kind of see it from the outside.
But that changed. You really were drawn into it.
Absolutely. This is all I've thought about for the last 10 years.
What was it like to draw that line on the map and then go to places that we understand today, Raqqa, the headquarters of ISIS, and really the miracle of this whole story, the people that kept your grandfather alive?
Well, first of all, Syria was nothing like it is today. You can't go there. But when I went there, it was during Assad was controlling the country, and it was very routine to be followed. It was business as usual. But, you know, to separate the people from the government, the people were incredible. And I think a lot of these names, Raqqa or Deir Zor, they weren't known to the American populace before the Islamic State took over, the Syrian war broke out. But this area is just the most incredible people. During my journey retracing my grandfather's steps, I found the clan that had saved my grandfather's life. And when I arrived in the village, 300 people greeted me. It was a Cinderella-like moment. You know, off went my dusty travel clothes, and they gave me this beautiful dress and headscarf and took me to a dinner where they had slaughtered a goat in my honor, and we ate off the same platter my grandfather had. And it was just one of the most beautiful moments in my life. Their great-grandfather had taken in my grandfather, despite the rhetoric that he had been hearing about the dangerous Armenians. And my grandfather became like a son to him.
Muslims protecting Christians.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was where my grandfather found his shelter.
And in your case, breaking bread and eating with the people who, but for them, you would not be alive.
what really resonates with me is the ripple effect of one kind act. This sheikh, this Arab sheikh who was Muslim, saved my Christian Armenian grandfather, and now four generations of our family are alive. And his descendants practice that same kindness. When I first arrived, they thought I was in danger and said it was their custom to take in people in need. And now these are the kind of people who need shelter now.
It must be so heartbreaking for you to imagine what you would love to do for them and maybe can't and maybe are trying to do at this very moment.
Yes, it's absolutely heartbreaking. It's hard to communicate with them. But one of them actually recently left their village and was part of the sea of refugees and made it to Germany, hopefully trying to start his life there anew, just like my grandfather when he came to this country so many years ago.
In America, the Armenian genocide and the reasons for the migration is not terribly well known. You say you didn't learn about it in school. I didn't. I grew up next to an Armenian family and didn't know about it until I was an adult. What do you think this story means now that we are much more focused on this region, this particular region of the Middle East?
I think history is repeating itself in the very same region. You know, the images that we see now coming out of that area of long lines of people being walked to their death or women being taken as sex slaves. It's the same thing that happened 100 years ago in the same region. And it's not just the minority Christians or the minorities in the areas. It's also Muslims who are being accused of not being faithful enough, which is what I'm hearing from, you know, the people who I'd met during my trips there.
In your heart, do you feel that even given all the instability, that there is an open invitation for you and your family to go there once again?
Oh, John, I hope that I can return there one day. I miss those people. They're my family. They've become my family. And every day I worry about them. I really hope that I can bring my husband and introduce them one day. And they're saying the same thing. We just all want to see each other again.
Well, Dawn Anahid McKean, thank you so much for talking to us. The book is The 100-Year Walk, an Armenian odyssey, an odyssey that is very much now your experience. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, John.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.